Hey y'all, hey, this is Dr. O here for another wonderful episode of Dr. O After Dark. And today I am joined with the wonderful, the talented Ace May, singer, musician, songwriter, and actress. So, welcome to Miss Ace May.
Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what you got going on.
So, I like to call myself a musician, entertainer. Just all things entertainment, but music is where my soft spot is.
Okay.
I love to sing. I grew up singing, writing, all kinds of stuff. So, yeah.
All right. So you're a singer versus do you do rapping or anything like that as well?
Yeah,
or
just... I got bars for sure.
Oh, you got both.
I got bars for sure.
Do I need to give you a beat? Mm-mm. Yeah, I'm not good with, I'm not good with giving a beat. I tried.
I mean, they gotta listen to music.
I know we're gonna get into it a little bit later, but since you said they gotta listen to it, where they can listen to your music at?
They can listen to it on any platform. Just search Ace May 22, the album. That's my most recent album that just came out.
Ace May 22?
Ace May is my name, but 22 the album is the album that just came out.
22 is the album name?
Mm-hmm. 22 the album.
All right, y'all, make sure y'all Google Ace May, her latest album, 22, to check out them vocals and all of them. Unfortunately, it did not feature me on this album.
That's okay.
Y'all know I got the la 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 la.
I'll let you do a remix.
Y'all know I got it in the, I'm so cold on the mic. But she was slipping this time. But next time, she got me.
I got you. Sure.
So where are you from?
So I'm straight out of ATL, I grew up on the south side of Atlanta.
ATL?
So,
So she is from Atlanta on the south side. So all of that, what was her name?
I'm ready.
I'm a Retta Sour,
and
from Atlanta. She from Atlanta, so.
I'm from ATL, man.
I'm a Retta ATL shorty, so all you, man, all your other ones, Luda, and your wife, because I got to give respect, but you know what I love. Yeah. All those who not from Atlanta proper, you are.
I am, man. I am.
All right. So tell me, so south side of Atlanta, what was that like growing up for you? Well, we know it as, back for me growing up, is not south side. It was more like the southwest Atlanta, like the SWATs. And is that when you say south Atlanta, is it southwest or just south?
Like south, like right up under Atlanta, like toward the south side. So like Clayco area.
Okay. All right.
Like it's right around the corner.
Okay. Yeah. So what was that like for you in the music industry with so many people here from Atlanta as influences, as we talked about, Ludacris, Big Boy, Outkast, Sleepy Brown. Is he from here? Who else is from here?
What she call it? Tiny and her.
Oh yeah. Candy, I know, and Tiny and Tia. Hey. Y'all so, all gonna come on Dr. O After Dark.
Yeah.
A lot of legends. Absolutely.
I went to performing arts school in high school.
Okay.
So I went to Tri-Cities and Outkast actually came from there, I believe.
Really?
Yeah. Like they went there too.
Okay. So we got some alumni in here. So the alumni need to come and support from Tri-Cities alumni. Mm-hmm. Outkast.
Yep, they be saying it in their raps. Like if you listen to some of the old songs, they said it.
But Miss Erica, because we all know the history and story. Erica Badu, that is my sister, my mother, my breath, my life, my every thing. So, in affiliation with your baby daddy, come on, we gotta have y'all on Dr. O After Dark.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
So, tell me, do you have siblings?
I do.
Okay.
Three siblings, two boys and a girl. And they're all kids.
I mean, they much younger than you?
Yeah, they're like, it's like an age gap between all of us. The last three versus me, it's like an age gap.
How big is the age gap?
Like, one of them is 12, 14, and 16. Like, they're all 2 years apart, too.
So the first kid came
and I was 12 already.
Okay, so when you were 12, you said 12, 14, and 16. So the 16-year-old came when you were 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then...
No.
14 and then 18?
No, so the ages, they're like...
16.
14, 12, and 10. That's their
age. Oh, 14, 12, and 10.
But the gap is like 12, 14, 16.
Okay, so the 14-year-old was born when you were 12.
Yeah.
And 12-year-old was when you were 14, and the 10-year-old was when you were 16.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
I don't know, man. I feel like I was ready for siblings, though. Like, I feel like I was one of them kids that asked for siblings.
Uh-huh.
Even though I low-key still had only child syndrome, but it was like I wanted a sibling, so when they did come, I was, like, excited. I was excited, yeah. But I was always babysitting, so...
So I know, like, and I think of even in my own life, my son, he was 12 years old when I had my daughter, and now he is 23 and my daughter is 11. But they have it's funny, they have an amazingly close relationship. Not as close as, you know, you would say if they're 1 or 2 years or a couple of years apart, but still that big brother, little sister bond has been, you know, amazing. Would you say that you see that, or has it also we look in and say through birth order, there is different things that we feel or see that may have impacted us throughout our life? Sometimes with the oldest child, we're exposed to more. We know more, we see more. Our parents confide in us more. Whereas, you know, the middle child or the young, you know, the baby is the baby and they have less than the middle child.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a middle child. We all go through that middle child syndrome. But with you having three younger ones, I would think the oldest one that's 14 may seem more like, because they're in a household together, the oldest.
Yeah.
And then the 12-year-old is probably the middle. And then the 10-year-old is the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of like this outlier because you're so much older.
I do feel like an outcast. Like, it's weird because we're literally not in the same peer group. So it's like, it's interesting because, like, the youngest one is the girl. The other two are boys.
Okay.
So it's like, she automatically gravitates toward me because
of big, yeah,
and
big
it's
sister,
like, okay,
yeah,
cool, like, you know, she be telling me little stuff. So it's like, okay, that relationship is a lot like closer long term. But the boys is crazy because, like, when they were smaller, it was like, yeah, we was attached at the hip. But then it's like, when they got older and they started turning into boys for real, it was just like...
And not wanting to listen to their big sister.
They didn't want to be in their room. They don't really associate like that. So it's like a whole other vibe. But my sister, she just want to be up under me. Like, she don't care. She don't care. And she's the one that's... My sister is on my mom's side, and then my brother, they on my dad's side.
Okay.
So she low-key only child at this point because I don't live in the house with them. So it's like she over there. You know what I'm saying? So when she do see me, she be all up under me. She just want to talk and play and like, yeah. So it's cool though.
Okay. So are you the only child from both your mom and your dad?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the magic.
The magic one that holds it all together.
Yeah. They got,
trying to calculate how many they have all together and all that. Now, are your parents, were they married?
No, they weren't, but I think they were together probably like 9 years or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because they were already together like for a few years, like before they even had me.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, they were together for a little while, though.
Okay. How is your relationship with your parents now?
It's great. I thoroughly enjoy my relationships with my parents, for real, for real. Like,
that's good.
Yeah, like, for real, like, having, and I guess because I'm older now, I can talk to them about,
you have that adult relationship.
Yeah, it's like a whole other vibe, for real, for real. Like, it's not like somebody standing over you telling you how to live, you know what I'm saying? Now it's more like, okay, like, we're here with it. Like, we talk about anything, like, both sides.
So tell me, when in your music, do you also write your own music?
Yeah, I write my music.
What is your inspiration behind your lyrics?
I would say at this point in life, like, it's literally just me expressing myself or like getting out feelings or whatever's on my mind. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's literally like a release type of thing.
Okay.
So whatever it is that I feel when I hear that particular track or whatever, it just that's where I start usually.
Yeah. So here we talk a lot about just other outlets and avenues of, you know, seeking mental health treatment. It's not always through therapy, but especially with a lot of us that are in the Black community, music is built into our soul and in our bones.
It is from Africa,
the beats, the drumming, from our, you know, just our history, which is built into our DNA. And that a lot of times is therapeutic. What I ask a lot of my clients and what I have them do is I have them create a fuck 'em list. That's a playlist that when you are maybe struggling mentally, you just want to tell him, her, the world, whatever. Screw you.
That's necessary.
I'm still good. I'm going to get through. You're not going to break me or take me down to a place or what have you. And for a lot of us who don't even seek out therapy, music is, I mean,
it is.
Keisha Cole, the whole Waiting to Excel.
Yeah.
Jasmine Sullivan. I mean, these are people that's on my Adrian Green, on my FM list, which is probably most dedicated to my husband. Like, when I get mad in my relationship and like, it's screw necessary. You, Negro.
Yeah, for sure.
So, if you were to create your therapeutic meditation, what soothes you, FM list, what songs would you have on your playlist?
All right. As far as soothing, off rip, I'm going to have Janae Aiko in there somewhere.
Okay.
She'd be coming with the vibes, man. She'd be singing, just... I just lay back and listen, like, yeah. So that right there, her music is definitely therapeutic. So it'll probably be like, one of my favorite songs is Magic Hour. That was on her last album.
Yeah.
And then, what's the other song? The one she got with John Legend, I like that one too.
Okay.
But yeah, it's like, yeah, they just put you in the same
and just feel you, help, you know, to soothe you or to release or whatever it is that you need.
Yeah, okay. So her. If I'm going to go bars, I'll say like Lil Wayne or Andre 3000.
Okay.
I like both of them, yeah. They can do it for you. Even like Drake, depending on what it is. Like, if it's not the party music, I'm talking about.
I'll say I like Drake.
Drake,
but
like the
for that F music, you know, he kind of soft. I love now Drake. I want you on Dr. O. I ain't calling you soft. I've been following you since Degrassi, and you in the, I don't know Drake. I know Degrassi and all that kind
of stuff. What's his name? Jimmy on that show.
Don't give me the lion. I mean, you trying to tell my age and I ain't that old.
No, you weren't even watching it.
I heard about it.
She heard about it. That's what it was. She didn't even watch it.
I heard about it. And I think I saw it maybe like on Netflix or wherever they show, you know, like they show Sister Sister and stuff like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's how I know about Degrassi, because you know I'm too.
That was a good little show though.
It was. I was such a Degrassi fan.
It was like a teenage, like, Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, Dawson's Creek. All. It was, yeah.
It was fun. I'm from
Seattle, so take that as you will. So for me, as I said, like when it comes, I don't think of Drake when I'm like, ugh. I'm more like awesome, DMX
like,
and
my nigga. You like grunginess.
Yeah, well, like I mean, like, no, when I'm like, when I'm in that F you, we got some.
Oh, okay.
Rihanna, bitch, better have my money. Like, you know, like, yes. Like,
Sullivan, one of them, she could do that.
Yes.
She's the queen of FU music, for real.
Everything.
And she be, it's crazy because she be hitting them notes and she be having an attitude.
And it sounds so beautiful, but it's like so gangster at the same time.
It be so that you are, but it's something about it, like,
like it hits you hard. And when you really, like you be vibing and then you really listen to it and you're like, did she just say that she cheated on her boyfriend with the woman?
That birthday one was out your car. That was when I at first really got on her phone.
That is still a classic.
I never heard nobody talk like that in a singing like R&B song. And I was like,
I bust the windows out.
And it was like a joke at first. I'm like, dang, like she crazy for this. And then I was like, nah, she can really blow though. Like,
So you are probably much younger. We probably about the same age. But there was a time in the past life when I was in the Navy, and back in 98, 99, early 2000s with the juvie, when I was hitting on some of that. You know, I ain't gonna say we had some shenanigans going on. The crazy part is it was not to dudes.
What you mean not to dudes?
Like, so it was me and my girlfriends, myself, my girlfriend Sean, Chandra Kirkwood Jackson, shout out.
Name dropping.
Yeah, all right. And my girlfriend Tanganika. Yes, that's her name. Tanganika Knighton. Now, Tanganika never had anything to do with the shenanigans that me and Sean had. But we used to have this rival girl that we used to like. And they used to do stuff to our car. They would key. Like, I didn't have a car. My girlfriend, Sean, she had a Neon.
A dot?
So many stories I can go in. She done buy, you know, done buy here, pay here, and told her not to get that Neon, but she wanted to keep up with everybody else and get in her car. Then she got it. And first weekend after she got it, she was like, oh, let's go. She's from Memphis. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's go ride to Memphis. I ride to Memphis with her in her car. The car broke down in the middle of the highway. In like, no, but it was like in some backwoods Mississippi, Alabama, somewhere where we like, they lynching around.
That's like a nightmare for us.
It was, but it was like the only people honking at us and everything, like the big trucks on the side of the road. But we had this wonderful black family who I'm still, you know, friends with their sons today, who was heading and driving the mom. They were driving on their way to Memphis. They picked me and her up and they drove us from where we were here in like Mobile, Alabama. Now, we were stationed in Pensacola. So to get from Pensacola to Mobile, that's only 45 minutes. Her car done broke down.
Damn, on a road trip, that's crazy.
45 minutes outside of where we was at. But yeah.
Broke down when y'all got there. Uh-huh. Worse to tow back.
Yeah, I forget. She had to ask like her grandmother or something like that to pay for her to get back. That's what I think her grandmother was like, yeah, I'll pay for you to get back with my granddaughter. So I had told her, I was like, I'll ride with you, but I don't have any money. But she was so like big on, no, I want to go home. I got to see my boo, pre-pugant boo, Terrell, who she had tattooed on her in Chinese letters and all that, all the
boo camp look.
I mean, because it's funny part about the name that it didn't say like in China, it didn't say Terrell in the Chinese characters. She had like the T, the dot, each letter out in his name, which it did not then say Terrell. It was just like a whole bunch of Japanese or Chinese characters.
Like it's complicated a different way.
But she wanted to go see him. I told her, I said, you know, I don't have any money this week and we didn't get paid. She said, oh, I'll take care of everything. I got money. I got I'll take care of everything. We're going to stay at my house. Okay. So we hop in the car. Mm-hmm. Car break. She had no money. She had no gas. Oh,
that's just a whole nightmare altogether.
The family was riding when they went and got something to eat. She didn't even have money to get full.
Yeah, see, you don't need to be on a road trip if you can't save yourself in a disaster.
That's terrible. And the grandmother, after her car broke down, the grandmother was like, I'll pay for you to get back because you're my grandchild, but I'm not going to pay for your friend to get back. Yeah. I was like, oh no, you had me come up here and knew that I didn't have no money. So somebody, I got to be back to the duty station on Monday. Somebody going to pay for me to get back. Like no, she was about to leave me.
Oh.
Because her grandmother was going to pay for her to get back, but was like, she ain't paying for me. And I'm like.
That's why you don't travel when you ain't got no money. Because if you can't save yourself, if you
and that's
to,
what I'm telling. I trusted her, and that's something I would never again. Right, but I was 17, 18, mm-hmm. maybe fresh out of the house, just graduated high school.
Yeah, you
just got that. From boot camp, and we have so many stories. Our story of going to Mardi Gras.
We gotta have them come up here then. Some of your folks.
Yes, we had to bring Sean and Tang and all them on Dr. Mm-hmm. O.
Yeah.
And have a wonderful time. Getting back to you, Ace May. Mm-hmm. Your inspiration behind your music.
Mm-hmm. What my general inspiration is?
Uh-huh. What inspires you with doing your for your music?
I would say, I think like it's fulfilling for me to know that I'm like producing something for the world in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like it's a gift that been given to me, and I'm like, it's my job to like give it to everybody else. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
That's kind of how I view it. So like for me, a lot of my inspiration comes from that, and then some of it is just kind of like just embedded in me. Like, I guess life inspires me.
So let's talk about what parts of life, because when we talk about and we look at, you know, what we do here at Dr. After Dark and things of that nature, mm-hmm. it's really about breaking the stigmatization, normalizing mental health, and, you know, mm-hmm. that humanizing it, that we all have ish that impacts our lives. And a lot of it, stuff that has impacted our life is what is through our developmental stages. It's mm-hmm. through our childhood, you know, things that we experience, whether it's oftentimes most things that we've normalized and said, oh, you know, you ever been on social media and they would have like all of the alphabets, and, you know, across, and they will say, oh, you know, you was raised by a black mama if you know mm-hmm. what these, and everybody in the comments are, ha, ha, ha. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Yeah. If you don't get your blah, 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 blah in this house by the street lights, come on. And we mm-hmm. all know it, but we don't realize mm-hmm. how even such as that has impacted us in a traumatic way. Mm-hmm. So when we think about trauma, and the pure definition of trauma mm-hmm. is, you know, threat of death or great bodily harm to you or your loved one. So when we think about it, and we're looking at a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old, you know, whoever, a child, mm-hmm. and we're told, go get the switch. I know for us, it's like, go get.
Oh, yeah. Dang.
I remember with my uncle, he was like, go wash your hands.
Oh, and
come
God.
Back with your hands washed.
That's torture.
Oh, yeah. And it was stinging. He hit your hands with that. Oh, and they stung so bad. But for us.
You just felt it. You said, ooh.
Yes, I felt it. I mean, my uncle, shout out to my mother's twin, just had his birthday October 14th and is, you know, no longer here with mm-hmm. us. But I still, I mean, that is a memory. And it wasn't even a meme. That was to my sister. He told that to my sister, but I feel it, that sting from that. Yeah. But when you're at that age, that is great bodily harm. Mm-hmm. Stenching cords, slippers, or even threats. I'll knock you in the middle next week.
Right.
I done brought you in this world and I will take you out.
Right.
How many times have we heard these things? And we can look at it as adults. We might even say these same things to our kids. And because we can look at it as adults and say, well, we know that the reality behind it.
Yes.
But when we look at it and we say, but the child that we're saying it to, that toddler, that preschooler, that early elementary school, do they really understand and comprehend that they're not about to be taken out of this world? And so with that, tell me, I guess, a little bit more about maybe your upbringing in regards to maybe some of the things that we have conceptualized or negate as just part of life. Whether it's being raised in low socioeconomic neighborhoods and seeing violence, of poverty, latchkey kids, you know, all of these different things that oftentimes we contribute either to the Black experience or the minority experience, the immigrant experience, whatever, the POC experience. How has that impacted or reflected in your music and who you are today?
It's funny you say that because it made me have to think now, like, dang, what's normal and what's not? Like, what's healthy and what was not healthy? Because, but as far as, like, I do have, like, childhood, I don't even know if it's, I could be minimizing it, but I don't know. I don't know if I have, like, big traumas necessarily at this point in life, but I will say, like, I know one of the things was my mom. She, I don't know how to explain it. She's a person, like, she has a personality where she can be very, like, nonchalant. Like, she can come off like that.
Okay.
A very sweet person, for real. But she just doesn't, like, emotionally go past, like, the highs and the lows. You know what I'm saying? Like, she kind of in the mid-range.
It just kind
of, like, she don't let herself get too, like, out of pocket either direction. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, she, like, in life, you know, I would compare when I was younger because, you know, I just knew what felt good at the time. But my dad is, he's one of those parents, like, he paid attention to the little things.
Okay.
So it's like, he was the parent that would show up to my games, put me in sports. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and would your mother make, you know, kind of just nonchalant about it and not like, you know, so when you maybe achieve something in school or within sports, like an award, and you want to come home, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Your mom was like, oh.
Yeah, it was like casual for her.
Okay.
Or it was like, even like celebrations, like birthdays and stuff like that. It's like, she don't even emphasize her own birthday like that. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, She cool with chilling. Like, she don't always want to go out and do something. Like, she might have a year where she just like, oh, you know, she'll say thank you and all that, but she don't expect much, you know what I mean? That's just her personality. But she would, I feel like that trait kind of carried over into certain stuff, like, for me as a child, and like, expecting her to show up for certain stuff that she just, like, that would just want me her personality to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. How did that maybe, I guess, what, you know, how did that make you maybe feel? Did you feel like any, like, sometimes what we talk about a lot is that rational mind versus that emotional mind. Like, I know my mom, it's my mom.
Yeah,
I know my mom loves me.
Yeah.
Of course, she ain't, but it's a difference between knowing in that rational mind and feeling it in that emotional mind. Like, I don't feel love and I don't feel like nobody, you know, we go through, especially during our teenage years.
Yeah.
Nobody loves me, et cetera, et cetera. Would you say that based on, especially maybe like based on your mother's behavior where she didn't maybe celebrate you as much as maybe you wanted to? Did you ever, you know, feel that way?
A question. In general, I feel like both my parents did a great job raising me, but I do feel like, as far as my mom and what I was just talking about, I feel like I did go through a stage where I would question if she did love me. Cause I knew like my dad's side of the family, they're very vocal and affectionate. You know what I'm saying? Like, we all say, I love you every time we see each other or leave each other or call, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was just, that was the norm. Like, mm-hmm. a certain amount of affection was the norm on that mm-hmm. side of the family. And I knew how that made me feel, you know what I'm saying? It made me feel like I mattered, like I was special or something, mm-hmm. whatever. But on my mom's side of the family, it's not as fluid in that way.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? That side of the family, like, we crack a whole lot of jokes, we do mm-hmm. a whole bunch of mm-hmm. But like, I don't know how to explain. Like, in my direct household, like, my mom wasn't like super affectionate towards me, like certain stuff. So it was like, I'm like, dang, I know what it feel like over here. Mm-hmm. But I was always comparing it to how she was as a person. So it made me question.
Okay.
At some point, I started questioning it.
So you question like her love?
Yeah.
For you?
Because At the time, I just didn't. It's like you're a kid. Your perspective only goes so far.
Yeah.
So you just automatically assume the worst. Like,
so it created thoughts like, I'm lovable.
You're just taking it all to heart. Love me. Yeah.
So how does that maybe like impact you today with thoughts of I'm unlovable or, you know, whatever, you know, whatever the negative thoughts may be, sometimes it's I'm unlovable, I'm unlikable, I'm worthless, I'm not good enough, or I'm not enough in some aspect. Does mm-hmm. any of those, when it comes to your mom and just her parenting style versus your dad's, was it any of those that you can say that resonate with you, or any of your own negative thoughts, and how do you take that out in your music, or mm-hmm. how do you resonate and even deal with and cope with those things, or how does it impact you in your life today?
I think today and age, I could see like a bigger perspective of it. So now I see like that stage in my life, I view it as like something that had to happen so I could be the person I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Cause I don't know, I feel like I would have had to learn that lesson whether it was through my own parents or it's later in life and it happens uh-huh. in another scenario. Like, that's how I look at it, but I'm grateful for it that it went the way it did. But ultimately, like me, what really changed my perspective on that was like how I felt emotionally was as I just got older, I started setting the intention to just really accept her for who she is. Like, that was mm-hmm. really the biggest lesson, like accept her for who mm-hmm. she is. Mm-hmm. It's not that something's wrong or she doesn't care. Like, at some point I realized, like, I know she loves me. Like, and I stopped questioning that part. But I was just like, oh, but I'm so bothered by this, that, and the third. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, how about you just accept her for who she is? Like, so I just started setting my intention on that. Eventually it just kind of just clicked. And I just was like, you know what? Sometimes you might not show up, but I know, like, every time I stop by your house randomly, you're gonna have a plate of food for me. So it's like, I look at it like her love is just, it show up in a different way. You
okay.
know what I'm saying?
No, and that's wonderful, because what, you know, I always tell my clients is that when a person, Maya Angelou, when a person shows you who they are, believe them. Oftentimes we get hurt and we have our mental health struggles. It's because we are holding someone to a standard or to a level that they have already showed us that either they are incapable or unwilling to meet us at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And either way, incapable or willing, that's okay. But if my standards are up here, and a lot of times our standards are built on based through society expectations. You know, I grew up on, you know, the Cosby shows and a different world, and that's what taught us what parent and family and, you know, should be like. And anything outside of that, it's like, well, you're not. This is how mom's supposed to be. You're not doing it. This is how siblings supposed to be. You're not doing it. So my expectations is up here. All the while, they're showing you I'm here. And either you're going to, as long as you continue to hold me up here and I'm here, then you're going to continuously be disappointed.
Yeah.
And so we have to decide, are we going to you know, maneuver and meet them where they're at, because we appreciate their and honor their relationship or their position in our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some things, as I say, put a person in their, you know, in their lane, have a lane. Everybody has their own lane and leave them there. That's creating boundaries. Yeah. Some people get offended by, oh, put me in my lane. No, it's not about that. It's about, you know, setting boundaries, because there's certain things, as you said, I know my mom, I now have been able to set my expectations, because as long as my expectations are up here, which may be the expectations that my dad has set, and my dad's side of the family. Yeah. And so as long as my expectations are up here, but my mom is down here, I'm going to forever be disappointed and forever be hurt and forever feel unlovable. But when I'm able to say that, no, I accept, my mom has showed me who she is, what she's capable or willing to do. And so I'm going to match that. And I'm going to say, you know what, mom, there's certain things that mom can get away with or mom can do or not do that my cousin, my sibling, my dad, Keisha from around the corner, James, whoever, because you're not in my mom's lane. You have your own specific lanes.
Yeah.
You know, for you. And that's how we can protect ourselves and our mental health in regards to not getting hurt and not feeling those things of unlovable or unworthy or worthless and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, I love that that has overplayed and kind of drawn in or bled into like your music and your lyrics and everything else like that. And so can you tell us, how can those who are interested and want to hear your music and your lyrics and support you and find you, how can we all find Ace May?
So my socials are Ace May ATL. That's ACEMAYATL. Yeah, on everything. So
Ace May ATL on everything. Shouty, don't forget it. All right, thank you so much, my love, for being here. Yes, I hope you do come back and, you know, have more dialogue with us. We really appreciate you for being here and normalizing what trauma looks like and mental health in all of us, and how other outlets, because not all of us want to seek out therapy because of stigmatization and everything, but we have all of these other outlets, you know, to be able to get the healing that we need. And music is just one of them.
Yep, I'll be crying.
One of the most powerful ones.
Yep. And you know what's funny is the music that I be feeling the most emotional about, and I be like crying while I'm writing it type stuff, and those be the ones that touch other people too. They come back and they be like,
because they're feeling your feeling. Absolutely. Because it resonates. Mm-hmm.
So it definitely does.
When you write stuff that resonates,
I feel better. Yeah.
I mean, that it really will teach, when you are real and raw from your soul, so many of us are going through and struggling with a lot of the same issues that when you speaking from your heart and from that pain and from that pain point, and you know what you're going through, it's going to touch somebody else.
Yep.
Because we're all interconnected.
Sure.
So thank you so much, Ace May. Once again, Ace May ATL on all social media platforms. Y'all make sure you like, subscribe, and follow Ace May. And don't forget, if you're not already, which you should be, but if you're not already, Dr. Olivia West on all social media platforms and on YouTube. Till next time, bye-bye.
Peace out.